on Federal News Radio.
Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer, brought to you by Vion Corporation on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Every week, Federal News Radio interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Ask the CIO with your host, Jason Miller.
My special guest today is Rick Holgate, the Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives Assistant Director for Science and Technology and Chief Information Officer. Rick, thank you so much for joining us.
Happy to be here.
Well, we've talked to the CIO from Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives before, but not you, so it's always nice to have a new face, so to speak, on our show. Let's start with some basics. I always like to get some feedback about what is the mission of the agency of the CIO we're talking to.
Well, as our name implies, it's really predominantly around violent crime. So we view ourselves as protecting our communities from violent crimes, criminal organizations, illegal use and trafficking of firearms, illegal use and storage of explosives, arsons, bombings, et cetera. Basically, everything that pertains to violent crime and the way it happens in the U.S. and internationally.
And, of course, it's a law enforcement agency, but it works closely with other parts of the Department of Justice, FBI, DEA. So it's kind of in that whole mix.
That's correct. We're one of four law enforcement agencies in DOJ, along with, as you said, FBI, DEA, and the Marshal Service.
If something happens and something explodes, or if there's some firearms issues, sometimes you work very closely with FBI or other agencies, right?
Absolutely. We have close partnerships with all of them. Obviously, in the areas of drug-related issues, we work closely with DEA. If it's a matter of, as you said, explosives, we work very closely with the FBI, and particularly in issues that could or may not be related to terrorism, we work obviously closely with the FBI as well.
Now, let's talk about you as CIO, because it's a pretty big mission to support. I mean, when you think about everything you do and every place you guys are across the country, let's talk about your role supporting the mission of ATF.
My title is broader than just CIO, so not only do I support the mission through our information technology programs, but also through our forensic services, which includes all of our forensic science labs, unique fire research laboratory, and also our financial investigative services. So I've got also that element of our Office of Science and Technology that supports our operational mission. But then, obviously, monetarily, the largest part of my portfolio is our information technology program, making sure that all of our agents and industry operations investigators throughout the country and internationally have access to the tools and the information that they need to get their job done effectively in the field.
Now, I didn't realize that the science and technology part, that falls into the forensic services. That's a hugely growing field, especially when it comes to the technology forensics. So when you talk forensics, are you just talking the idea of technology forensics, meaning looking inside database, finding the needle within the needle of the haystack? Or are you talking about the other part of forensics as well, which is obviously when you go, for instance, take fingerprints, which is the most obvious one?
Yes, I'm actually talking about the full portfolio of forensic science. So all the traditional sort of CSI disciplines that you imagine, to include DNA analysis, fingerprint analysis, firearms and tool mark analysis, document analysis, all of the traditional disciplines around forensic science.
And I imagine there's so much of this relies on technology now, that's why it falls under your portfolio.
That's correct. Yeah, both the technological aspect of it, as well as, frankly, if you've followed some of the debate and dialogue about forensic science in the U.S., the need for the forensic science disciplines to be independent from the law enforcement missions that they support, to provide that level of objectivity and independence. So organizationally, for a long time now, ATF has chosen to align its forensic science programs with the Office of Science and Technology and not within the direct control of our operational law enforcement mission.
And so, I got to ask the question, a question you hate at most parties. Have you ever even watched those CIS type shows?
Oh, unfortunately, yes.
and does it provide you with a good, do you sit there with your family and friends and go, no, they can't do that. That's not right.
Well, ironically, it's not so much the science that's wrong. It's more the time frame in which they do the analysis that's grossly exaggerated.
Yes,
and accelerated.
Yes. In 1 hour, everything gets solved. It's amazing.
Absolutely.
Let's talk a little about your role as CIO. Now, you obviously are both on the strategic side and the operation side. When you look across your day, when you look at your week, where are you spending more of your time, or are you about a 50-50 split?
Well, I'd like to think I spend more of my time on the strategic side of things, but probably on balance, it's a combination of about a 50-50 split of focusing on long-term strategic issues of where we need to go as an organization, 50% on the day-to-day things of, why did something happen, or what are some specific interim, tangible, tactical things we can do to make things better on a day-to-day basis.
Most people I talk to say they probably prefer to be on the strategic side, but once in a while I'll find a CIO who says, no, I grew up on the operational side, I really like like the operational stuff. Do you have an opinion? Do you wish you could spend more time one side or the other?
I would like to think that both in terms of where my role takes me logically and also kind of where my aptitude lies, I would say it's probably more on the strategic side of things. Certainly the operational side has its attractions in the sense that it provides a little bit more immediate feedback in the sense of, you know, you get a much more immediate sense of making something better or making something happen for the organization. But, you know, really where I feel like I should be spending most of my time is more on looking down the road. And
budget air cuts and budget tightening, you're going to have to spend time on both because the strategic side will need to say, okay, what can we deal with from an operational standpoint that maybe we can cut costs or do something different. So I imagine these two things are really coming together more and more.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Let's talk about your office a little bit. How many federal employees do you have? How many contractors do you have? And what is your IT budget for 2011?
And as the Office of Science and Technology, today we're about 250 people total. But frankly, the vast majority of those people, almost 200 of them, are actually on the forensic services side of things. So we have a relatively small IT-focused workforce of about 70 people. So it's relatively small given that on an annual basis we're running a budget of about $90 million a year to support the organization. So it's a pretty large workforce. Obviously, you know, based on the amount of resources that we manage, we rely very heavily on contractor workforce and you know, service providers to deliver a lot of our IT services.
Roughly how many vendors do you have working day in and day out within ATF?
Well, since we don't typically buy our vendors by headcount or FTE, it's a little hard to judge, but it's on the order of a couple of hundred easily, particularly when you look across the country and how many people we have supporting our field offices, field divisions throughout the U.S. But in terms of, you know, core service support contracts, we're trying to get that down to a more focused and manageable number of about, you know, five or six core sets of services that we rely on to deliver IT services to the organization.
Roughly how many do you have now? Do you have a dozen? Do you have many dozens?
Well, I would hope a vendor portfolio that's a little bit more complex than it perhaps needs to be. So we've focused over the last year or so in trying to get that down to a more manageable number. So today it's probably on the order of, you know, if you count all of them, it's probably 12 to 15. And we're trying to get that down to, you know, somewhere under 10.
So does that mean you're going to look at, for instance, bundling services? I know bundling is a bit of a dirty word, but I know people looking at, okay, we have three contracts to do help desk. Maybe we just need one contract to do help desk, that type of bundling versus the more traditional bundling that people get upset about where it's services that aren't related, but you bring them all together just to make it easier.
Yeah, and that's really what we're trying to do is where there are, you know, different service providers providing similar or the same or very much related services, we're trying to combine those into a more logical set of vendor relationships. You know, naturally, you know, we have to be sensitive to small business goals and you know, the existing small business relationships that we have. We don't want to harm those relationships. So obviously, we're taking that into account as we're evolving these service provider relationships as well. But as you said, the ultimate goal is to get down to a smaller, more manageable, more logical number of service providers and service relationships in the organization.
Now, I guess the next logical question talks about procurements, RFPs, stuff like that. Now, is something, are you guys, when you guys consolidate those contracts, you're going from 12 or 15 to under 10, maybe even 5 or 6, are you going to recompete contracts, or how's that going to work?
We are. We're in the process of doing that now, actually. So over the last couple of years, we've started the process of, you know, taking a look at our portfolio of contracts and service provider relationships and really looking at where there are opportunities to merge some services. And obviously, if we do that, it's going to be at a logical transition point for each of those contract relationships. So as some of those contracts come to logical conclusions and we can foresee when that's going to happen and when there are some opportunities to converge these services, we're taking advantage of those and moving those into more consolidated, consistent sets of service relationships.
Anything we should look out for in the near future, in your next 3 to 6 months?
Well, there's actually one that we're trying to get out even here within the next week around software maintenance, and that's one of the things that we've, you know, looked at across our portfolio of service providers and have realized, I think, some opportunities to consolidate that a little bit more into a single relationship. So that should be coming out here shortly. And then the major port relationship that we have has been in place for a little over 7 years now. It's come to its logical conclusion, so we're in the process of recompeting that as well. And that will also entail, in some cases, you know, to use your term, bundling, but really more, you know, consolidating logical services into that relationship where it makes sense.
So the software maintenance for vendors who listen to the show and they want to keep an eye on this FedBizOps it's going to go through, or is it another vehicle?
It will be out there, yes.
And then the other one, the major IT infrastructure, is that already out there, or is that coming as well?
It's coming. It's not formally out there yet, but that's one that we've been working through the GSA Alliant vehicle to award.
All right, very good. All good information. Sounds like we got a little bit ahead of ourselves. We talked about some of your priorities. So let's take a break. When we come back, we can talk more about your priorities. You're listening to Ask the CIO on today. Is guest Rick Holgate, the Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives Chief Information Officer.
Sound familiar?
Where's my data stored? Who owns it? How many duplicates exist? How much file data is unused? How are we going to pay for all of it?
Vion Corporation's Capacity Services is the answer. Your organization needs a trusted advisor with the right technical tools and the right financial expertise to solve big storage problems for good. For over 31 years, Vion Corporation and Hitachi Data Systems have been planning and preparing to solve big data problems for the government at the exabyte level. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com. Whether your organization calls it cloud, utility computing, managed services, or capacity infrastructure, at Vion Corporation, they pioneered capacity services 10 years ago. Vion was awarded the first and currently holds the largest federal government capacity services contract. They provide government IT owners an agile financial vehicle for meeting mission-critical IT needs. Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been delivering IT solutions to the government for over 31 years. Visit Vion.com to learn more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Rick Holgate, the Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives Chief Information Officer. Now, Rick, before break, we talked a little bit about some contracts that are upcoming for IT services. Let's talk about other priorities. What are you hoping to get done over the next six or
further on, for on what you mentioned in terms of our IT infrastructure support contract? That in and of itself represents a pretty significant opportunity and priority for us in the sense that we view that as a chance to really rethink the way we manage and deliver IT infrastructure services throughout ATF. And it's an opportunity from a number of perspectives. One, it allows us to evolve to a more flexible, more modern, more sophisticated way of managing those services, but we also see it as an opportunity to drive some efficiencies and agility into that relationship in the sense of allowing us to adopt and adapt those services as the organization inevitably changes over the next 5 to 6 to 7 years. So that's an important priority for us to get that kind of a relationship in place to really give us that ability to make fairly transformational investments that we started about a year, year and a half ago around our firearms information systems. So it was a chance we had to make some fairly significant investments in all of the information systems that support our firearms-related missions, both on the law enforcement side as well as on the industry regulatory side. And there's a relatively large number of systems involved in that portfolio of missions. It's about 75% of what we do as an organization, so it's obviously very critical to what we need to accomplish as an organization. And frankly, some of those systems had not really been revisited or re-engineered or transformed in a fairly long amount of time. So this was a pretty important opportunity for us to really take a look at that portfolio of systems, evolve it to a much more modern architecture, a more capable set of systems and interrelated capabilities to really serve both our law enforcement constituents as well as our industry constituents much better than we had in the past. And so we're looking to deliver the industry-facing side of that here in the next 3 to 6 months and actually get some of that capability out into production, which would allow some of our industry partners to actually interact with us much more electronically than they've been able to date. And then on the law enforcement side of things, really transforming a lot of the firearms tracing systems that we use and getting those delivered over the next roughly 12 to 15 months. So those are some important things that we're looking at doing in the firearms portfolio specifically. We've also got some things in the works around trying to manage essentially digital associated with video surveillance and the digital content that's associated with that and what to do with all of that content behind the scenes once we've actually collected it. And obviously there are some evidentiary implications for that. There are some intelligence implications for that and really looking at putting some infrastructure in place to allow us to manage that increasingly large amount of content more effectively, more flexibly, and looking to put some of that capability in place as well. And then you'd alluded to mobility and some of those kinds of capabilities. Certainly that's something that we're looking at given that our workforce is highly mobile. Obviously, of 5,000 employees, about half of our organization is special agents, our law enforcement cadre, about another 700, 800 or so are industry operations investigators who spend most of their time on scene and on site with our industry partners. So a large portion of our workforce spends a lot of their time out of the office, and giving them the tools, the capabilities that they need to operate effectively in that environment away from the office is obviously important to making sure that they're as effective as they can be when they're in the field.
Your plate's pretty full. Let's talk to some more specifics. Now, the IT infrastructure, that is a contract that's held by whom? And do you have any estimates in terms of how much it's actually worth?
Today, that's a contract that's held by HP. It's been, as I mentioned before, it's been in place for about 7 years now. It runs today about $38 million a year, so it's approaching almost half of our IT part of our service portfolio. As I mentioned, we are looking at including some additional things in that relationship that aren't necessarily there today. So in very round numbers, we're probably looking at a $40 million a year relationship going forward as it supports ATF. I should mention that we're also looking to partner, not looking to, we are partnering with the Marshall Service in the next generation of that relationship. So we are looking to cooperate more closely with the Marshall Service in adopting, to the extent it makes sense, a common service delivery model, if you will, between the two of us as law enforcement agencies within DOJ, because we have very similar operational needs, similar geographic footprints, et cetera, it makes sense to share some of that commonality wherever it makes sense.
Now, when you talk about agile, more efficient, obviously that always has to lead us down the path to cloud computing. It has to lead us down the path to managed services. Is all of that going to be part of this new IT infrastructure?
It will. And actually, to some extent, it's part of the existing relationship. I mean, I think many people would characterize our existing infrastructure relationship as essentially managed services in kind of the traditional sense of what most people were used to over the last 10 years or so as people moved to relationships like the Navy Marine Corps intranet or some of the NASA desktop outsourcing relationships, et cetera. So it's very consistent today with those kinds of relationships. What we're looking to do in the next generation of the relationship is to move toward, as you alluded to, some of the more modern ways of delivering some of those services. So application services, whether it's virtual desktop infrastructure, and one of the things specifically that we're looking at is email and collaboration as a service. Today, that's a service that we acquire through our service provider. Our email is already hosted in a data center that they own and operate, so we're already most of the way toward a cloud-type model for delivery of email and collaboration. So we're looking to move more fully to that kind of a model here in the next generation of our service relationship.
I know there's going to be a lot of interest. I'm sure you're getting a lot of calls about it. So you can blame me if you start getting more calls. Let me jump over to some of the other parties. You talked about the transformational investments around this firearms missions. And, mm-hmm. and you said about 75% of what you do really focuses on this one mission. What types of systems are we looking at? Are we talking about databases? Are we talking about tracking systems? Give me a sense of where the transformation is happening in terms of what kinds of services that you're providing your customers.
The firearms mission that I alluded to, again, has kind of two major components, one of which is the law enforcement aspect of it, which is obviously focused on the illegal use of firearms and violent crime associated with firearms and those aspects of our mission. And so a lot of the systems that we use in support of that are around things like tracing of firearms, trying to ascertain, once a gun has been used in a crime, how it came to be used in that crime and what that can tell us in terms of what illegal activity may have been associated with around firearms tracing. We also provide that as a service to other law enforcement agencies. So we have an externally facing system that we call eTrace, which is our primary firearms tracing system, that we actually make available to external law enforcement agencies both domestically and internationally. So as of today, that system is used by actually 31 countries and has about 3,400 U.S. law enforcement agencies that use that system on a regular basis. And through that system, ATF performs roughly 330,000 firearms traces a year based on requests that we receive through that system. So you can tell it's a hugely visible system to our external law enforcement partners. It's got a large volume of traffic in the system. And so having that system be as seamless as possible, as modern as possible, as scalable as possible is something that's very important to us. And so that's some of the investments that we're making are to make that a much more modern system, a more scalable system, and to integrate it, frankly, more behind the scenes in terms of the things that we do to actually accomplish firearms traces internally within ATF. So tying the internal processes much more explicitly to the externally facing systems. So that's one aspect of those transformations. The other I alluded to is our firearms industry relationships, in which we regulate federal firearms licensees, of which there are about 115,000 throughout the U.S. So again, a large volume of external constituents who to date have frankly largely interacted with us in manual or paper-based processes. So one of the things that we're trying to do is make that interaction, much more customer service friendly, much more electronic, much more easy to use from a licensee perspective, so that they can interact with us much more straightforwardly, much more reusably, more repeatably, and particularly as they need to, you know, interact with us on a number of transactions, et cetera. So really focusing on kind of the customer service aspect of things and getting a lot more capability out there in that sense. So those are the two transformational investments that I was alluding to around firearms.
Very nice. We're going to take a short break. Then when we come back, we're going to talk a little more about the mobility, because I know that's one of those issues that you are spending a lot of time on. You're listening to Ask the CIO, and our special guest today is Rick Holgate, Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives Chief Information Officer.
Sound familiar?
Where's my data stored? Who owns it? How many duplicates exist? How much file data is unused? How are we going to pay for all of it?
Vion Corporation's Capacity Services is the answer. Your organization needs a trusted advisor with the right technical tools and the right financial expertise to solve big storage problems for good. For over 31 years, Vion Corporation and Hitachi Data Systems have been planning and preparing to solve big data problems for the government at the exabyte level. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com. Whether your organization calls it cloud, utility computing, managed services, or capacity services, at the core is the rapid provisioning of information technology infrastructure. At Vion Corporation, they pioneered capacity services 10 years ago. Vion was awarded the first and currently holds the largest federal government capacity services contract. They provide government IT owners an agile financial vehicle for meeting mission-critical IT needs. Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been delivering IT solutions to the government for over 31 years. Visit Vion.com to learn more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Rick Holgate, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives Chief Information Officer. Now, Rick, before break, we talked a lot about your priorities. We talked about your new IT infrastructure contract that's on its way coming out. We talked about how you guys are updating and transforming, how you support the firearms mission. One of the other areas that you talked about was mobility, and I think this is a big issue, something you've talked a lot about when I've seen you speak at events, but also a big deal, as you said, because almost half of your agents, almost probably two-thirds of your agents, are in the field so often that they need that access to data, they need to be more mobile and have computing power. Give me a sense of where you guys are heading, overall mobility, and how are you guys going to make that area better?
Yeah, and as you said, just given the demographics of our workforce and the mission that they have, mobility is a very important enabler of them in terms of getting their mission done on a daily basis. And one of the initial impetuses behind mobility was the video surveillance issue. So that was driven largely by the fact that we had some funds to invest through the Spectrum Relocation Program and had a chance to make some investments to improve the way in which we conduct video surveillance. And one of the obvious opportunities there was to give people access to those types of surveillance on mobile devices. So that was kind of our first impetus for dabbling in the mobility area. We pretty quickly realized the value of that kind of capability. Probably we're hitting it at the early stages of the technology maturity of that kind of capability, which has come a long way in the last, you know, 12 to 18 months. But then also realized that there are a lot more possibilities and value added that the mobile platforms can provide well beyond anything related to video surveillance. And really looking more at evolving to a next generation type of mobile capability beyond what we currently provide to our mobile workforce, which is, you know, like most other organizations, laptops with wireless connectivity, Blackberries, the sort of traditional types of mobile connectivity and mobile capability. But certainly with the evolution of, you know, more and more capable smartphones, tablet type devices, the opportunities were pretty obvious to deliver much more capable productivity enhancers to our workforce on those types of devices. And frankly, our workforce came to us with some of those same, you know, obvious applications of those types of devices in their ability to execute their mission. So this wasn't just a technology-driven exercise. This was a user-driven exercise where our workforce saw the things that were possible to encourage us, to drive us to experiment more with these devices. And so today we're in a second generation of a mobility pilot. This one happens to be focused on, you know, an iOS platform, but certainly we're trying to remain as technology objective and agnostic as possible as we go forward on this, but really looking at delivering a very wide range of capabilities on these platforms for our users, with the goal being, you know, one, obviously to enhance their productivity, but also to help us understand what a next generation of user devices might look like for our workforce. So, you know, over the long term, over the next, you know, 12, 24 months, what is our workforce going to look like in terms of the kinds of devices that they're expecting to be able to use in the field and what we can deliver on those to really give them the capabilities that they need. Everything from, obviously, the video surveillance, but also office productivity, the ability to access our case management system, the ability to pull up reports and statistics, the ability to, you know, tap into other sorts of law enforcement databases or reference databases, really giving them the entire portfolio of things that they normally need a, you know, much more heavy laptop or other type of device to get to, and delivering that instead on a mobile platform.
A couple of things that stood out, but one of the things that I want to talk to you about real quick was security. And obviously there's a big push across government, and you're hearing this at the Veterans Affairs Department, even within the DOD, of the idea of bring your own device. So, you know, if I have an iPhone, if I have an Android device, I can find the network if I'm an employee at whatever agency. Is that even an option for ATF and other law enforcement agencies?
You know, without going too far on a limb, I think bring your own device is actually a significant area of opportunity for us from a couple of perspectives. One, I think we're getting to the point where technology is sufficiently mature that we can actually relatively confidently, and I say relatively because obviously it probably won't be as confident as if you actually owned the device and you know, took control over the entirety of the device. But I think, you know, we're getting to the point where you can reasonably confidently secure a user-provided device, particularly for the part of that device that contains mission-type information. And so there's technology out there that we've experimented with, whether you call it sandboxing or area on the device that allows a user to get to the mission information, the enterprise information in a way that's isolated from the rest of the device. So I don't particularly care what the user does with the rest of the device, and I know with a good degree of confidence that the information within that isolated area remains secure.
And finally, let's talk a little bit about your background. How long have you been CIO, and where else have you worked inside, outside of government, and what brought you to ATF?
Actually, I've been with ATF now just about 2 years. It'll be 2 years at the beginning of August. So it's been an interesting 2 years. I actually came from another law enforcement agency, the Naval Criminal Investigative Service, so the infamous NCIS of the two TV shows. I'd worked there for about 5 years, so had kind of gotten used to the law enforcement environment, the law enforcement culture, and actually found out about the opportunity at ATF through a former director of NCIS who had come to work with ATF as a consultant after he'd retired. So that's how I came to the opportunity at ATF.
Very nice. Unfortunately, we are out of time. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Rick Holgate, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, Assistant Director for Science and Technology, and Chief Information Officer. Rick, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer, brought to you by Vion Corporation on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Ask the CIO Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering it. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris.
FAA Administrator Randy Babbitt.
We've spent more than 2 years modernizing and making it efficient, building morale, and then to have this happen through no fault of anyone here. This is a political fight, and if people want to have a political fight, they should go rent a ring and get in it and have it. But to take 4,000 innocent FAA employees and literally tens of thousands of construction workers and put them out of work, I find this unconscionable.
Hear the entire interview online. FederalNewsRadio.com/Federal Drive. WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, practices and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy Midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News